What's up, iRaters? Welcome to episode 8 of iRations, The Uplifter. My name is Drake Peterson, and for those of you who are joining us for the first time, this is our weekly live stream. We are here live on YouTube every Friday at 3:20 Pacific time to raise your spirits, answer some questions, talk music, talk shop, and of course, talk all things iRation. This week's episode is all about the early days of iRation, from the Grom days on the islands to the college years in Southern California. We're going to learn how iRation became what iRation is today. Before we learn some iRation history, I'm going to throw it over to Micah Brown for some iRation news. MB?
Thanks, Drake. So, as you're all aware, we have postponed our summer dates, and it's official, and you know, just wanted to let you guys all know that we can't wait to play songs for you guys live. iRation is founded on live music, and all of the iRaters out there are the lifeblood of our band. There's nothing that comes close to sharing our music with you in a live setting face to face. So we're pretty disappointed that we have to postpone. But, you know, with that being said, we still have an album coming out July 10th. And so we're going to do our best to come up with new ways to bring you some live performances and some special content around that. So just stay tuned on that. We love you guys. And with that being said, since we don't have any way of making money for our crew this summer, we have released the honorary crew tee, and you can get that right now in our merch store. Comes with a free digital download of Kosin once that is released. And all the proceeds from every purchase will be going directly to our road crew, our audio, our production guys that put the shows on, help us sound good and look good every night. So check out irationmusic.com if you want to get a shirt. Grab one for your neighbor, grab one for your friend. And yeah, July 10th, 7th studio album, Kosin, coming out. So we'll probably have another single or some more stuff coming before that to hold you over. But yeah, looking forward to it. Back to you in the studio, Drake.
Thanks, Michael Brown. Anyway, so today we are going to be learning a lot about iRation and how the band got started. This was super fun for me because I was talking to some old members like Joe King and getting a lot of information from all of you guys in the band. And I want to just go talk to the very beginning before the band was even created. Let's go back to the 90s, Big Island of Hawaii. Push, Kaysen, Joe, and Adam, you all became friends at HPA, which, for those of you that are not familiar with what that is the Hawaii Preparatory Academy. Some of the older members, like Joe King, Catlin, and Kai, also went there. But even before that, Push and Kaysen, you guys knew each other. Is that right, Kaysen?
Yeah. Micah and Catlin were in the same class together. And our moms were good friends. And so, yeah, we would hang out, go to the beach. It was looking through some old pictures, that shot of us in the valley when we were about, I must have been like 8 years old, maybe. Pretty sure that's when you got that scar on your neck from tossing a lighter into the fire. Micah tossed a lighter in the fire just for, like, you know, shits and giggles, and the thing exploded, flew back out of the fire, and landed on his neck.
Yeah. So Kaysen's older brother Catlin came to HPA when we were in fourth grade, and he and I became good friends. And the camping trip, we were lighting fireworks down in Waipio Valley. Made a big mistake.
The iconic camping
still have
trip.
The mark on my neck to remind me of it every day. I got asked if it was a hickey for like 12 years after I got it. But yeah, still there. Still got it.
Battle scars. Joe, can you tell us a little bit about HPA? When did you go there? What years?
I showed up freshman year, ninth grade, 9th to 12th. And that's an amazing institution.
Yeah, I think I was a year or two above Joe, and we both lived in the same dormitory. So I think that's how we first became friends. And then we had like a surf club where we'd go surfing before school started. So we'd dawn patrol with the Watsons. And I think that's how we became friends.
Very nice. And when did you guys all... start playing music together. Did you guys ever, were you in band at all together or a choir or anything like that? Poosh, I know you were in choir.
Yeah, I was in a, in choir from my freshman year all the way through. We actually joined choir because it was an automatic 100 grade one of a 100 A plus just for if you attended it. So like everybody, I mean, a lot of people joined it, but then the, you know, I joined it and, because I got convinced by a friend, Nathaniel Bryson, to do it. And then I got into it and got, you know, as I got better and better at it, I joined the small group. There was a smaller group of, it was kind of an accelerated group where we did a lot of acapella stuff and, like did a lot of performances outside of the school choir. So yeah, I did that. And then, I think I played a lot of Hawaiian music. I had kind of a group in high school that did Hawaiian local music and we performed at school functions and stuff like that, but nothing, no bands. I don't think anybody really had a band in high school except for Kaysen. But yeah, I think we mostly started playing together in college.
Very nice. Adam, what instruments did you play before you graduated high school?
Well, we all kind of did a little bit of the choir thing. I think it was mandatory, right? We did, it wasn't the same choir class, but we did all have to sing at some point. I remember even having to do the test where you had to sing in front of your peers and they determined if you were a baritone or not. I was a baritone, but still couldn't sing very well, but I think everyone had to do it. But I did, everyone kind of learned
song contest.
Yeah. And then I did ukulele, which was another kind of mandatory thing in sixth grade in Hawaii. And then, I did clarinet for a little bit before that, and but bass didn't come till much later, till we moved to California.
Joe, what about you? What did you play before you graduated high school?
I played guitar, and before that, I dabbled into trumpet a little bit, but I got really bored with that. And Kaysen's brother, Catlin, asked me to play drums for like two Pennywise songs that are our
bro him
senior
talent show, I think
talent show, that was it. And so I could barely play the song, and it was bro him. And first strum, the guitar player breaks the string. Tom Sanford, shout out brother.
Dr. Thomas Sanford, coincidentally the doctor that treated me for a mild concussion when Adam threw his bass across the stage in San Francisco and hit me in the head with it. Little known fact. Oh, my God.
And that's why no one tosses basses anymore.
A lot of injuries for Poosh on this one, so on this episode so far.
Okay, now let's go over to college time. So who was the first to go over to the mainland for college?
I think that was me, actually, because I started at University of Hawaii right out of high school. Micah was a year behind me. Joe was a year behind that, I believe, and Kaysen behind that. I had a buddy, Isaac, that went straight to UCSB. I went to UH, didn't really feel like I was getting the college experience, and he talked me into moving to Santa Barbara with the allure of waves and keg parties, something you don't see in Hawaii. And I think that might have influenced Joe to come, and I think the year before Micah went to Pomona, and so that was kind of the start of us making the shift from Hawaii to California.
Well, yeah, and Catlin as well. So Catlin came up, Kaysen's older brother Catlin came up to go to City College as well. Came along with that kind of a whole crew of guys at the same time.
Yeah, so Isaac, who actually produces the Iration Kona Coffee, was kind of the guy that influenced a whole slew of us to come to Santa Barbara.
When you guys started playing music, how exactly did that get started? From what I understand, Joe started playing music with Rory, who's now in Revolution. You guys started playing a little bit, and Adam kind of discovered you guys and started playing with you. Is that correct, Joe?
Yes, that's correct. So Catlin and I lived in the same house, and then our next door neighbor basically was Rory and a bunch of these other San Diego dudes we knew. and there was like a shitty ass drum set that was set up in the basement there and had like holes in the heads and stuff. And Cato and Rory both played guitar and were over there just like strumming. And they're like, come over and just play drums. Let's just mess around. So we just drank beers and literally just made noise. And that was the beginning, pretty much.
Yeah, and then I remember watching them and just being kind of like, whoa, this is so cool. And Rory and I had been friends. I had one of the only half pipes in Santa Barbara in my backyard. And Rory was a really good skateboarder before musician. And we became friends through skateboarding first. And then I remember putting on like a Black Uhuru while we were skateboarding. And we found out that we both had a huge passion for reggae. A few months later, I saw that they were all jamming together. And so I went home that Christmas break and got a job painting a house that paid $400 exactly, which was the exact cost of a bass guitar kit that came with the guitar, the strap, the cable, and the little speaker. And so I learned the three songs they knew, and then a few others, mostly Bob Marley covers. So I was able to learn the ones they knew, show them some new ones, and that was kind of the start of that.
Was the name Iration already the name of your band, or has that not been established at this point in time?
No, not yet. That came later. It was more just a hobby where we were just kind of feeling things out and just kind of seeing what was possible. But I mean, being an actual band hadn't even occurred to us at that point.
So then what happened next? Was Poosh, was that you graduating, or Kaysen, was that you moving to the mainland?
I think it was, well, Poosh, you graduated and moved to Santa Barbara like about like maybe like a year before I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so sorry, go ahead, Micah.
So I graduated and I had no from Pomona College and I had no idea what I was going to do, and Kai was living with Catlin and our friend Racy and our friend Cully in Santa Barbara in a two-bedroom apartment, and they were all packed in there, and they're like, dude, just come move in with us, like you can share a room with Kai and we'll make do for the summer and figure it out. So I moved in, got a job at a telemarketing place, didn't have any idea, and they're like, you're gonna sing backup in the band, basically. I was like, okay, I'll be the background singer. I'm down to be in the band anyway, you know, any way I can, you know, just stoked to be a part of it. And because we would come, when I was in college, we'd come up and watch them play. They had a few gigs downtown at Velvet Jones and Wildcat and some of the other places in town. So I'd come up from Claremont, Inland Empire, and drive up with some buddies, or, you know, catch the train and come up and catch a show. And I always was like, thought it was so cool. We jammed a couple times early days when Rory would come stay with Joe and Kona, and I had to get electric guitar, and I started playing guitar in college, so I kind of knew how to play, but I had no idea how to like set it up. And we'd go and jam at Joe's house and play some songs, and it was like no bass, I don't think, before Adam was still on Oahu, and it was just like me, Catlin, Joe, Rory playing. We'd have like, I think maybe Rory was playing bass or Catlin would, they'd switch off or something. And then we had a house party at Racy's house when Racy wasn't even there. I was house sitting there. I was house sitting their house, and we threw a party and jammed in their base in their like their basement like fun room. And they found out years later, but it was those are the early days. Yeah, and when I moved up, I was the background singer, and then kind of, it was a big group. Basically, when we first started, it was like anybody who could play any instrument could be in the band. If you could do anything, you could shake a tambo, you could play four chords on a keyboard, you could be part of it. And that was like kind of the cool part of it. It was like all of our buddies were doing it, and we had, you know, it was like 10 people playing at one time.
Kaysen, what are your earliest memories of the band?
Well, I moved to Santa Barbara in 2005. That's when I graduated high school, and I had visited my brother, Catlin, the spring right before I graduated, and kind of got a firsthand look at, you know, the lifestyle that these guys were living, going to college and playing at house parties, and it looked like a pretty fun time. And So I decided to make the move and go to City College. And just so happened that right when I moved up, there was kind of a need for a keyboard player because Rory had just graduated and he was kind of going on to his own deal. And I think there was a show booked for graduation weekend. And these guys were like, hey, we need a keyboard player for this. And I had bought a keyboard with the money that I got from graduation. And that was pretty much the beginning of it for me. I was living in the garage of the house that my brother and Micah and Kai and Adam, we were all living at together in Santa Barbara. And yeah, it was interesting times. You know, we weren't good at music. That's for sure. We were trying to all figure it out still, but it was good fun. Good fun.
Let's just say after that first bong hit, everything changed.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Learned about, you need learned to
edit
about
that,
the
edit
reggae.
That out. Sorry.
Keep it in, man. This is the uncut version. Now I want to talk about the name. I always hear people are always asking, you know, hey, what does iration mean? You know, all that. Adam, you always have a good answer to that. When did the name come into play and where did you come up with it?
Well, the name came from a Bob Marley song. And it was, I think, mostly just because we were playing Bob Marley covers at the time. And it comes from the song Rastaman Vibration. And in kind of, I guess, in Jamaican slang, it means creation. And at the times, we were trying to push this idea of new roots music. And I guess the idea was taking a foundation of roots reggae and putting a more modern twist on it. So it seemed like a fitting way to describe what we were doing at the time.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Now, once you guys were all formed and you had a name and all that good stuff, when did you guys start playing outside of Santa Barbara? Kaysen, you want to answer this one?
Sure. Yeah, in Santa Barbara, we had Velvet Jones. They kind of, our friend Craig, who's the owner, he kind of had noticed what we were doing out in Isla Vista with the house parties and everything. And he offered us to play at Velvet Jones. So that was the first downtown gig that we played. And then outside of that, I'd say, you know, LA and San Luis Obispo, Redondo was probably one of our first gigs. We played the Lighthouse, in Redondo. Is that Redondo or
Hermosa?
Hermosa,
but
same kind of area, but yeah, they were the first ones to have us. And it was very interesting for us because, you know, we were used to playing these kind of crazy house parties where everyone was raging and drunk and having a great time. And then we get into this tiny little venue where there's like not that many people and it's kind of quiet. And, you know, it was definitely a little bit of a, okay, we need to like polish our music. We can't just go off drunken bravado here. So yeah, I'd say SLO and LA were the first couple places outside of Santa Barbara.
Was it, Austin to Joe, was it in your plan to make music your career?
No, it wasn't my plan, but I didn't have it ruled out the entire time. I didn't think we would ever do this for, you know, sort of a living. I had a plan to, if this, you know, we'd run this thing out as far as it would go and have fun and try to make ends meet the entire time. And then when everything was done, go back to Hawaii and start farming coffee and doing that whole thing, which is not bad, but hey,
what was your degree in, Joe?
Business economics. It's not fun.
Business ethics.
Describe business ethics.
Poosh, what was your degree in?
I have a degree in psychology. Which Kaysen? Has been very useful.
Dealing with all these guys.
I have a degree in dropping out of college to be a musician.
Adam, what about you?
The more popular musician's degree.
Yes. I have a degree in communication.
at what point did all of you guys realize that, hey, this band is actually, you know, doing really well, and this is going to be a long-term thing? Poosh?
I think it was kind of around the time where, well, there's a couple jump off points from there. It was when Adam graduated from college. We were kind of at a place where we were trying to figure out if we should keep going or if he was going to move home. You know, are we going to keep doing this? It's just a lot of changes. You know, some of the other guys were leaving. Parker, our buddy that was a guitar player, left. Rory obviously transitioned to playing with Revolution, and he moved out of town. So he moved to San Diego, or he moved somewhere else. And it was just it was kind of one of those things where we were like, well, what do we have a future here? And I think we were all just like, Cato and I kind of had a long conversation about whether or not we thought it was something that we could keep doing, you know, and if we had something unique. I always felt like we had something, a sound that was unique from the rest of the bands that were kind of making music at the time. At that point, it wasn't the reggae rock scene or reggae scene wasn't that big. It was like Slightly Stupid, Pepper, Expendables, and then kind of the traditional Jamaican roots reggae bands and artists that would come through town. Steel Pulse and like Junior Reed, you know, those kind of Don Carlos, those artists. And so we were like, we do something that's different, you know, and I feel like we could kind of make our own place in the scene, you know? And so I think that was kind of the jumping off point. I think it was probably in the 2006-07 era where we decided to kind of start pushing it a little bit further.
So New Roots came out, your debut EP came out July 12th, 2006. Where did you guys record that, and what was the process like? Adam?
We recorded it at Loyola Marymount University over by LAX in Playa del Rey, Los Angeles. I believe we had a friend that had access to their studio there, so we were able to record the whole thing as a school project for free. And
Lauren.
So shout out to her. But yeah, I don't really remember a lot of the recording process. I remember we had the songs done for a while, and so we just kind of went in and tracked them. But yeah, I still at that point too, it was a very we really didn't have the thought process that, hey, this is our career. It was still mostly that kind of hobby phase.
What about Joe King? So Joe King is one of the past members. He's now working with Revolution and The Green. What was his role in the beginning of Iration? Kaysen?
Yeah, King was the percussion player for us when in our early days. And then we kind of figured out that, you know, through watching other bands, that we needed someone controlling our live sound. So we all kind of came together and proposed it to him, and he was super open to it, which is, you know, props to him, because he basically had to go from on stage to off stage. But it really, really helped us out as far as, like, you know, getting the sound to a point where, like, you know, we could go to other venues and play them, and it would be, you know, a uniform sound. So
yeah, and specifically, okay, so I think the show where that happened was at the Slow Brew, where we were opening for the Expendables, and we saw Donovan Haney mix them, right?
Yeah, and we were all very impressed by their sound, you know, and I think we had some issues playing with house guys, you know, monitor guys yelling at us for, like, moving monitors on stage and stuff, and so we're like, all right, this sucks. Let's see if we can transition King, and who is actually a really good percussion player. But at that point in our career, it was just a little bit of excess, and we needed a sound guy more than we needed a percussion player. But fun fact, King still plays percussion on most of our old stuff, the recordings.
I really love that he, even though he was the sound guy, that you guys still listed him as a band member. And, you know, most people don't really do that for the sound crew. So that was very admirable. Now, going to a few years later, your first major tour was with Pepper. Is that correct, Joe?
Yep. Yes, that was Playboys in Paradise tour.
How did that come to fruition?
Well, we were really good friends with all the boys, mainly through Micah and Catlin and a couple of our other friends. They had a graduation party, high school graduation party on the Big Island, and they had Pepper play. That was 2000. And I think we just got the connection then, and they kind of knew we were starting to play music, and they just gave us a shot, basically, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, and right before that tour, their manager at the time, Sally, had offered us a gig at the Vault in Long Beach, which was our first, I'll say, first time playing outside of a club or a bar and playing in a real big venue. And I think they liked what we did then, and that kind of segued into that whole Playboys in Paradise tour.
So, MB, what exactly were you doing? You obviously weren't in the band at this point around 2007. What were you doing at this time?
07? I wasn't really playing music at that point. Like I was in bands in high school, and I was a drummer actually originally. I was in multiple bands during high school, but after I graduated, I ended up moving to Hawaii. I lived in Oahu for about a year in 2004, and I sold my drum set to help pay rent when I moved over there. And so I brought an acoustic guitar with me, and that was kind of my move to Hawaii. It was actually like what transitioned me from being a quote unquote drummer to more of a guitar player. And so during the next few years, I mean, I ended up moving back to California after a year of living there. And I was just kind of working at Home Depot and playing acoustic guitar after work. And, you know, around 2009-10 is when I started playing like open mic nights. And I had a couple of friends that I was playing for in private that pushed me to go to some local bars. And I ended up, actually the first time I ever performed any songs that I wrote was at the OC Tavern in San Clemente, which I know that you guys played there around the same time too. So it's funny because we probably crossed paths like early on when I didn't even know who you guys were and you didn't know who I was, but I lived like right around the corner from OC Tavern just shortly after that. So, but yeah, I wasn't in the music business at all. I was a working man, 9-to-5 kind of guy. And didn't think that music would ever really become anything for me at that point.
I remember the first time I met you, MB, I think I was with Adam. It was at Doheny Days. They just did, was that the festival they had right there at Dana Point? And like we went over to your house afterwards and we were just drinking beers and rapping out. I think that was the first time we hung out.
I think so, because I knew RP through Chris Hurley, and he was like, hey, I'm going to bring some of the Iration Boys over. Is that cool? Because we were having a little, I played Doheny Days 2011 with my band, which was one of the first like big festivals I ever played. And it was, yeah, walking distance from my house in Dana Point. And so you guys came over and hung out that night. But I met Poosh at Cali Roots or something that year as well, because it was 2011 I think was the first year I went to Cali Roots and hung out with you guys in the Sprinter, and started planting the seeds of friendship and like, hey, take me out on the tour, you know, like every other guy that's starting out, you know. So
I want to get to one of your album or one of your EPs, Sample This, because it has one of your most successful hits, Falling. What was the process behind recording that particular EP, Poosh?
Well, that EP was at a point where we had an offer from a guy named Charles Brotman that lives in Hawaii, that lives in Waimea, actually our hometown. And he offered at the time was the guys that were there were me, Catlin, Kaysen, and Kai to come over basically for 2 weeks every day. And he runs this songwriting festival in Kauai every year that has all these Nashville big wigs guys, you know, LA and Hollywood guys that write for the big pop artists at the time. They're writing for you know, the Britney Spears and all those type of artists. And he would put on this festival in Hawaii every year and fly him out. And then they'd do workshops. So he was kind of a guy that was really into songwriting. He has Grammys for Hawaiian music, Slack Key. And he offered to kind of take us under his wing because he heard our music and was like, these guys have talent, but they don't understand songwriting, I think, at this. So he was put us in a room every day. We'd go over to his house in the afternoon or in like 11 in the morning, and we'd try to write a song a day, and he would kind of walk us through the whole process at his home studio. And then we'd cut like a simple demo at the end of the day, just acoustic guitars and vocal. And at the end of that time, we had a bunch of songs that we had kind of started that ended up being a bunch of the songs that are on Time Bomb. We also wrote Electricity and I'm With You, I believe, were the two of them that were ended up being on Sample List that were from that EP from that time period, writing with Chuck. I think I wrote Falling and Wait and See separately during a period when the guys all went home to Hawaii and I couldn't afford to fly home. So I was stuck at our house in Santa Barbara for like 2 weeks and it was super hot. It was like a 95 degree heat wave. And I just sat on the couch with GarageBand and kind of wrote for days and days and days at a time, and wrote a bunch of songs during that time. And when we had those four songs, we're like, well, let's go cut an EP. And we'd worked with JP Hesser, Castaway 7, before. I think we'd cut half the songs from the New Roots EP with him. So he offered us to come down and do that. And we went in there and cut. And he had gotten better. He had gotten better equipment. He kind of understood the recording process a little bit better. We did too. We were a better band at that point. So yeah, we cut all the songs with JP at Castaway 7, and that ended up being Sample This, which was kind of the first jumping off point of our career as far as like music, recorded music, giving us a boost.
Yeah, for me, that kind of was the moment where I realized, wait, this could be our career. Like, I remember getting back from Hawaii and Micah sitting down in the living room of that house we all lived, and you showed me Falling, and I kind of played along, and I had already been wanting to do this type of bass pattern, and right away it kind of clicked with the chords that you did. And kind of soon after, our manager Mike, who we had met through booking at Velvet Jones, he was like a promoter, he got the song on a very early iPhone app called Tap Tap Revenge, which was kind of like the early Guitar Hero style thing. And I very clearly remember after the EP came out, we'd booked a show at the Roxy Theater in Los Angeles, and we're all sitting there in the green room, and Mike came in and said that the EP was number 3 on the iTunes reggae charts and that the show at the Roxy had sold out. And we're all like, sold out? Like, what does that even mean? You know, like, we'd never sold out a show. We'd barely packed shows, but there was a line out the door. The show was sold out. And I think that was really the pivotal jumping off point where we're like, okay, we're all in after that.
Well, who is in the band at this point and who is not in the band anymore? Kaysen?
For what? For the Roxy show?
Yes.
I believe that was myself, Adam, Joe, Micah, Poosh, Joe King, and Kai, I believe, was, yeah, that was.
Yeah, so right after the tour we did with Pepper, Kaysen's older brother, Catlin, decided to leave the band. He just had gone, he had all, like had to get a bunch of dental work done, and it was like really expensive dental work, and he was like super stressed out about it. He was together at that point with his now wife, Megan. And I just remember we went to coffee and he's like, dude, I can't do this anymore. I gotta like, you know, he loved to play music. He was one of the original members of the band. Like, he was pretty much the front man for the beginning stages of all the way up until that point. And he was also the other guitar player. So I remember when he decided to leave, I was like, shit, like I have to play all the guitar parts now, and like I have to learn all his parts, and like, how are we going to make up for his stage presence? Because he had a really strong stage presence. He was like the guy, you know, he had been the guy. And so that kind of transitioned the band to it being me and Kai kind of being the co-singers and co-frontmen from that point on. But yeah, that Sample This EP was kind of what happened just after Catlin left the band, although he did have a part in writing some of those songs. But that kind of from that point on was kind of where we made a bit of a jump.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, and that.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, go ahead, Kate.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I think that for Catlin, you know, moving back to Big Island was a big thing for him. After we had done that Playboys in Paradise tour with Pepper, we all kind of got a glimpse as to, you know, what life was going to be like if we wanted to continue touring. And it was definitely a grind. I mean, it was a super grind. We were in our tour van and, you know, driving ourselves, and, you know, it was tough. And I think that also, I also want to give a shout out to Pepper, because going back to that tour, I mean, they pretty much showed us the ropes on that tour. I mean, from everything as far as their performance, stage presence, all that, to, you know, the technical side of things, getting our gear off stage in a timely manner, and just basically exactly what to do to be successful at touring. So big shout out to the Pepper boys.
Yeah. I remember Tech Nine would actually time us, and we could get all of our gear off stage in under 90 seconds. And he kind of instilled that whole thing of like, hey, I don't care when you go on, but you're off at this time. And we would be so on it. And to put things into perspective for Catlin, it's like we went on this whole national tour up to the Northeast coast. And I think Pepper went off to Europe or went on the 311 cruise. So we had to route our way back home. So we went from going to all these big shows with Pepper to these tiny bar shows where, you know, we were driving ourselves. We were going to the merch after our performance. Everyone's running on zero sleep. The whole show was booked. The whole tour on the way home was dubbed Gimps in Hell, because it was booked solely through MySpace. And it was me looking up bands that were in areas that could just get us home. And they were just tiny shows where you're literally at your wit's end. And I mean, shout out to all of us for sticking that out, because that was the most grueling year, I think, to this day.
Can you tell us about the Trash Bar in New York City?
Yeah, Trash Bar was a great, great time because, well, first of all, Joe King's girlfriend at the time came out to the show. It was a tiny venue in Brooklyn, and they got in a fight right before we go on stage, and she went to the mixing board and spiked all the controls. So suddenly we're completely screwed. There's only like five people there anyway. And then at the end of the show, I remember the promoter, I don't even know why he put it in an envelope, but he gives me the envelope and there's 11 $1 bills in it. And so that was kind of, you know,
sick.
It was kind of like most of us must have been thinking, hey, what the heck are we doing out here? If there was ever a time to jump ship, it was then.
Yeah, smooth transition from Playboys in Paradise to Gimps in Hell.
When did you guys start getting bigger shows? Was it closer to the Time Bomb era, Adam?
Yeah, it was definitely during the Time Bomb era. And I think one of the biggest jumping off points for us was 2009 West Beach Music and Arts Festival. And two of our friends that were promoting around Santa Barbara at the time, they kind of, in the same way that Pepper gave us a huge jumping off point, like we didn't deserve to be on that tour, but it was kind of like, hey, we're friends. So they gave us that tour. In that same sense, Twin Productions put us on the main stage when we shouldn't have been at that level, but they did. So we were able to play, I think, right before Pepper, Slightly Stupid, and these bigger bands. And then all these other bands were on the kind of the smaller stage, like Soja, Dirty Heads. And also that festival too was a model for the One Love Cali Fest, Cali Roots. That was one of the only times they had a day dedicated to bands in our genre. And these are bands like Tomorrow's Bad Seeds, The Expendables, you know, Pepper, Slightly Stupid, Dirty Heads, Chapter 11, Bargain Music.
B Foundation.
Yeah.
So I was talking to Joe King yesterday, and he was giving me a bunch of great photos and audio files, like straight from the soundboard. Probably some stuff that you guys don't want me to share. I do want to play something at the end of the show, but one of my favorite things that I got to see in this whole spew of things was a writer. For those of you that don't know what a writer is what bands send to venues to let them know what they need for the show, whether it's sound equipment, drinks, or food. This one was very entertaining, and I'm going to throw this over to Micah Brown to read this writer from, I believe it's around 2010, 2009.
Yeah, so, I mean, it starts with hospitality, and...
Wait, let me guess. Well, let me guess what's at the top of the list. Handle of Jim Beam.
That's actually about 10 items down, but it's definitely up there. You guys go for the food first. You have a meal for $8 or a $120 buyout, 2 pounds of turkey breast, 1 pound of Swiss cheese, 3 tomatoes sliced, romaine lettuce, loaf of wheat bread, condiments, mustard, brown and yellow, mayonnaise, chips and salsa, 1 case of imported beer, 2 cases of domestic, 2 cases of water, and then you get your bottle of Jim Beam, your bottle of Kettle One, your 4 2-liters of soda, a 12-pack of Gatorade, 2 4-packs of double shot Starbucks cans, 2 4-packs of sugar-free Red Bulls, cups, towels. You got the crew socks on there, so I feel like that's one thing that's been held over ever since is the 6-pack of white socks for Case.
Oh, yeah.
This is the best one. Additional items. 25 comp tickets, all access were specified. Reserved parking for Dodge Sprinter with trailer 30-foot. And then the technical, I won't go too deep in the technical, but there's some funny things that are like bolded out. Like one says, for the front of house main PA, the subs that he requested were double 18 boxes preferred. And then in bold, it says, this is a reggae act. A generous amount of subs are required. As a rule, we suggest 50% over and above the usual system configuration. King had his priorities in order for the front of house. You got to get that bass pumping. But yeah, it goes on and on. It's pretty funny.
Yeah, the Jim Beam is down the list. But trust me, if the rider budget got clipped, it remained.
Yeah.
That seems like a later rider too. Like that was like when we'd actually had a little bit of like asking power. Because before that, it was like you get what you get. Like when we went out with Pepper, it was like you maybe get a 12-pack of beer. They might give you a bottle of booze,
and it wasn't a handle. Like waters, it was a small
some waters
small
or something like that. Yeah,
you get to not get yelled at by the house monitor guy.
Type one.
Well, this is going to be a two-part series, so we're going to be getting into the later years after Time Bomb next week. But we're going to be sharing a lot of these photos in the link below. You can get some links to all of these photos and pictures that we're going to post on the website. And boys, thank you all so much for coming and sharing all of the iRation history. We're going to get into the later years next week. More stuff with Micah Brown. And... is there any shout-outs that you guys want to do? Any of those people that you want to thank from the beginning?
Let's give a shout-out to all the past members up until this point. I'll do my brother Catlin. So big shout out to Catlin, my brother, for showing us the way.
Jessica Goldman,
Parker Anderson,
Lacey Biven,
Alan Merzian,
a one night special guest.
Andrew Bay for a show.
Luis Lopez.
Giovanni's Pizza.
Luis Lopez, ex tour manager.
Shout out to RP for his one tour as well.
RP did one tour as a tour manager. Cesar Archundia was our like faithful roadie for many tours, / merciless driver. Cracky
Billy B.
Shout out Billy Coach. B. Coach and Tech Nine for kind of being the tour dads that showed us the way.
Kai Boy. Of course. Yeah. Yeah. People still ask me when Kai's going to come back.
Shout out the King family. Like, you
guys going to work with Kai again? I'm like, dude, I work with Kai every day on our fantasy football stream.
Reunion album.
I get more texts from Kai in that stream than I get from like all of my family members combined on it. But I do, I want to say like, it was really cool for him to, when I joined up, you know, we'll talk about it next week, but he kind of sent me a private message on Facebook or something and just was like giving me his blessing. Cause he left, he had just left and it was a transitional period for you guys. And he was like kind of just giving me the go ahead, like giving me his blessing for me to take his spot in the band. And he thought it was like a good fit, and it made me feel a lot better going in knowing that he was cool with it. And it was a nice, smooth transition.
Nice.
If any of you out there listening have any questions that you want to ask any of the boys about the early years or even the later years, you can always send us a text or leave us a message on our hotline at 805-225-6886. Again, that's 805-225-6886. I'm going to play us out with an old recording that Joe King gave us. This is of Cookie Jar. This is a live recording of Cookie Jar. And it was at the Hawthorne Theater in Portland, Oregon, circa 2008.
Pre-click.
And remember, and remember, when the news gets you down, you can always tune into The Uplifter. See you next week, guys.